Good morning, everyone. Welcome. My name is Bob Mayer. I'm an alcoholic. And I have the pleasure of chairing this workshop this morning. And let me see. So before we get going, let's ask for a moment of silence and gratitude for the AA recoveries of the past 75 years. And let's go followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other as they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The anonymity statement as follows. There may be some here who are not familiar with our tradition of personal anonymity at the public level. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. Thus, we respectfully ask that AA speakers and AA members not be photographed, videotaped, or identified by full name or audio tapes and in published or broadcast reports of our meetings, including those reports on the Internet. The assurance of anonymity is essential in our efforts to help other problem drinkers who may wish to share our recovery program with us. And our tradition of anonymity reminds us that AA principles come before personalities. On a further note about anonymity, out of respect for others, please do not take photographs during any of the meetings at the International Convention. Also be considerate when taking photographs around the convention venues. Take care that you do not capture images of AA members, family members, and friends who did not give permission and may not wish to appear in your pictures. Please do not post recognizable photos of identifiable AA members on websites accessible to the public, including unrestricted pages and social networking sites. Yeah, let me see. Well, there's supposed to be anybody that needs special needs sections that knows that require it, but they're up here in the front, looks like. Remind you to turn off your cell phones or put them on vibrate or something like that. And announce that the recordings of this meeting will be available at the recording sales booth in Hall B of the convention center.
Good morning. My name is Bill. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 23rd, 1976. I'm a member of the Monday Night Men's Group in Sarasota, Florida. And we welcome you. Come down and see us. Probably the better time to come down would probably be in January, February, or March. Forget June, July, and August. I want to tell you how I got selected. I've known Rick for quite a while. He is the coordinator for the convention, and I've known him through PI when he sat on the PI desk in New York. And I called him, and I said, I'm retired now, so if you need any help in San Antonio, I'd be willing to dine a week early and help you with whatever you want me to do. And he said, Bill, don't worry about it. He said, we got it set up. It's all set up from the GSO, and we have a tremendous amount of volunteers in San Antonio, so they're taking care of everything. I said, okay. And he said, well, maybe I can use you as a speaker or chair. And I said, fine. Didn't think anything more about it. 3 months later, I get the letter. I'm nervous. I'm shaken, the tears come, and I should be okay with that, right? Because I spoke in San Diego in 1995. But I got to tell you something, standing up here now, the knees are shaking a little bit, but once I get started, I'm going to be okay. Anonymity at the public level. Ha. Tough subject. I have a friend that's chairing a meeting at 9:30, and Dick, who is a past delegate from the Sarasota area, years ago, he invited me to speak at a sponsorship weekend. And I said, what do you want me to talk about? And he said, talk about sponsorship. And I said, okay, what do you want me to say? He said, don't ask me, man, get in the books. And that's what I did. When I found out I was going to speak about anonymity, I got out the books. Pass it on. AA comes of age. Dr. Bob and the good old timers, language of the heart. And I read and I read all this stuff. And it was okay, and I'm writing notes, and I got all kind of pages and stuff, and I'm trying to condense it. And when I talked to Rick, he said 15 minutes. So I time it. I got 19 minutes. Oh, God, I got to cut some of that out. So I cut some stuff out. I got it down to 13 and a half. Then I went to my book. As Bill sees it, that was just said to make sure all you people are awake. We all know it's Bill Wilson. Anyway, what I did was I looked up anonymity in here. And if you've ever read this book, there's a ton of stuff about anonymity. There's a ton of stuff about everything in this particular book. So what I did was I originally had 12. I cut it down to 7 because of 15 minutes. And I just what I want to do is read part of the paragraph, a section, or read the whole paragraph to you. It talks about anonymity at the public level. And if you want to follow me, if you happen to have the book, which I know you don't, on page 316 is where I'm starting. And on 316, the subject is called Our Protective Mantle. Almost every newspaper reporter who covers AA complains at first of the difficulty of writing his story without names. But he quickly forgets this difficulty when he realizes that here is a group of people who care nothing for a claim. Probably this is the first time in his life he has ever reported on an organization that wants no personalized publicity. Cynic though he may be, this obvious sincerity quickly transforms him into a friend of AA. Jack Alexander, if you remember. Moved by the spirit of anonymity, we try to give up our natural desires for personal distinction as AA members, both from among alcoholics and before the general public. As we lay aside these very human aspirations, we believe that each of us takes part in the weaving of a protective mantle which covers our whole society and under which we may grow and work in unity. Number 2 is page 278. And on 278 it says, speak up without fear. Few of us are anonymous so far as our daily contacts go. We have dropped anonymity at this level because we think our friends and associates ought to know about AA and what it has done for us. We also wish to lose the fear of admitting that we are alcoholics. Though we earnestly request reporters not to disclose our identities, we frequently speak before semi-public gatherings. We wish to convince audiences our alcoholism is a sickness. We no longer fear to discuss before anyone. If, however, we venture beyond this limit, we shall surely lose the principle of anonymity forever. If every AA feels free to publish his own name, picture, and story, we would soon be launched upon a vast orgy of personal publicity. While the so-called public meeting is questioned by many AA members, I favor it myself, provided only that anonymity is respected in press reports and we ask nothing for ourselves except understanding. Page 299, it's called Anonymity and Sobriety, the second part. We now fully realize that 100% personal anonymity before the public is just as vital of AA as 100% sobriety is to the life of each and every member. This is not the counsel of fear. Is the prudent voice of long experience. Page 198, the lead is tell the public. AAs of worldly prominence sometimes say, if I tell the public that I am an Alcoholics Anonymous, then that will bring in many others. Thus, they express the belief that our anonymity tradition is wrong, at least for them. They forget that during their drinking days, prestige and achievement of worldly ambition were their principal aims. They do not realize that by breaking anonymity, they are unconsciously pursuing those old and perilous illusions once more. They forget that the keeping of one's anonymity often means a sacrifice of one's desire for power, prestige, and money. They do not see that if these strivings became general in AA, the course of our whole history would be changed. That we would be sowing the seeds of our own destruction as a society. Yet I can happily report that while many of us are tempted, and I have been one, few of us in America actually break our anonymity at the public media level. My favorite, the rationalizers and self-effacing. We alcoholics are the biggest rationalizers in the world. Fortified with the excuse that we are doing great things for AA. We can, through broken anonymity, resume our old and disastrous pursuits of personal power and prestige,
power, public honors, and money. The same implacable urges that, when frustrated, once caused us to drink. Dr. Bob was essentially a far more humble person than I, and anonymity came rather easy to him. When it was sure that he was mortally afflicted, some of his friends suggested that there should be a monument erected in honor of him and his wife, Anne, befitting a founder and his lady. Telling me about this, Dr. Bob grinned broadly and said, "God bless them. They mean well. But let you and me get buried like other folk." In the Akron Cemetery where Dr. Bob and Anne lie, the simple stone says not a word about AA. This final example of self-effacement is of more permanent worth to AA than any amount of public attention or any great monument. And on page 255, it's called Wider Understanding. To reach more alcoholics, understanding of AA and public goodwill towards AA must go on growing everywhere. We need to be on still better terms with medicine, religion, employers, government, courts, prisons, mental hospitals, and all enterprises in the alcoholism field. We need the increasing goodwill of editors, writers, television, and radio channels. These publicity outlets need to be opened even wider. Nothing matters more to AA's future welfare than the manner in which we use the colossus of modern communication. Used unselfishly and well, we can produce results surpassing our present imagination. Should we handle this great instrument badly, we shall be shattered by the ego manifestations of our own people. Against this peril, AA members, anonymity before the general public is our shield and buckler. And finally, from the book on page 43, how much anonymity? As a rule, the average newcomer wanted his family to know immediately what he was trying to do. He also wanted to tell others who had tried to help him, his doctor, his minister, and close friends. As he gained confidence, he felt it right to explain his new way of life to his employer and business associates. When opportunities to be helpful came along, he found he could talk easily about AA to almost anyone. These quiet disclosures help him to lose his fear of the alcoholic stigma and spread the news of AA's existence in his community. Many a new man and woman came to AA because of such conversations. Since it is only at the top public level that anonymity is expected, such communications are well within the spirit. If you're curious, these writings are from the grapevine, the 12 and 12, AA Comes of Age, 12 Concepts, and various letters written by Bill W. What I want to tell you is a little story about my own personal education in anonymity at the public level. I've been in public information for over 30 years. I've been in AA for 34. My first stop was in a prison. My first sponsor took me to a prison when I had 60 days, just told me to sit there and listen. I got into PI, CPC, Public Information Cooperation with Professional Community, about a year after I had been in Alcoholics Anonymous. I moved to Florida in 79, and I thought we were active in Michigan. There is nothing. I haven't been to a lot of areas, a lot of districts. There is no area that I know that's more active than Area 15, District 4 in South Florida. And so when I was actually chairman of the district, and our local television station invited someone to come to their top news to talk about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was asked to go. And so I went. I had already been in public information now for 14, 15 years. And I knew about the anonymity. My point here is that we have to educate the public that these traditions, these rules are for us. They're not for the public. They're not for anybody outside of our rooms. They're for us. So I went to the studio. Let me just jump back 1 minute. When I was drinking, I lived in Michigan. I worked for the airlines during the day, and I tended bar at night. And my little thing that I wanted to do or liked to do, I was a campaign director for the March of Dimes, which is the fundraising arm, for 6.5 years. And I wanted everybody and anybody to know who Bill Kay was. And I let everybody know I had business cards, and I had flyers, and I had everything. So this extreme change that when I did the interview with TV some 15, 20 years, 30 years later is what I want to show you, the importance of anonymity at the public level. So I go to the TV studio, and I'm there, and I meet this young man who's going to do the interviewing. And he said, "Now, Bill, this is what we're going to do. We're going to sit you in the back here in this chair, and I'll be up in the front in this chair, and we'll both have microphones. And we'll have one camera on me, and we'll have one camera on you." And I said, "No, no, we can't do that." And he said, "What do you mean we can't do that?" I said, "We can't have my face on television." And I said, having worked a little bit in TV before, I said, "I know a little bit that you can etch that out." And he said, "Well, okay, but I don't like that idea." And he said, "Well, by the way," he said, "I need your full name, address." I said, "No, we can't do that." He said, "Why not?" I said, "Alcoholics Anonymous. We have a tradition of anonymity at our public level." Those were not the exact words, but you know what I'm driving at. And he said, "We have to do that." And I said, "We won't have the interview if that's the way it is." And so he looks, and I'm getting my stuff, and I'm getting ready to leave. And he's walking around yelling at his producers and directors and all that jazz that they do at TV stations. And I started to walk out. He said, "Wait a minute, Bill." He said, "Come on back." I came back. And he calls his producer over, and he said, "I've got an idea." He said, "We're going to put Bill in that back chair, and I'll sit in this chair. And we'll put one camera over his left shoulder and one over his right shoulder." And I looked at him, and I said, "That'll work." And see what happened. The idea may have came from somebody else. The young man took the credit and did what we asked him to do. That was my education, really, on anonymity at the public level. We are very concerned about that in District 4 in South Florida. A lot of the guys, just because I've been around for a couple of years, have come to me and asked me about certain things that they want to do in committees. I am very concerned about public anonymity. Why? Because I know that through books like this and the other books that Alcoholics Anonymous puts out, that's what it talks about. I used to write letters when people or businesses or stands broke anonymity. And the line, the lead line on this was, "Alcoholics Anonymous, anonymous, so important, it's half of our name." May God bless. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Bill. And next we will have Shonda from Louisiana.
Hi, my name is Shonda and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 25th, 1990, and I am from Lafayette, Louisiana. I live there currently. Originally got sober in New Orleans, where I'm from, my hometown. First of all, I want to say thank you. Thank you for having me here. If I would tell you that I was delighted, I would be lying. But I am honored. I really am. I am just so honored to be able to be a part of this conference and to have been asked. And I feel that way about all of the service that I've been able to do here in Alcoholics Anonymous. It really, really, truly is an honor and a privilege. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Love Alcoholics Anonymous. It is really what it brings me to life. It is what I get most excited about. I got sober relatively young. And when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, at least where I was living, in the little meetings that I was going to, everybody was old, or old by my standards. I was 19. Everybody was 30 and up. So I looked around and I looked at these people and I thought, are these the people that I'm going to be with for the rest of my years, a day at a time? And I heard it said yesterday and I thought it was the funniest thing. I went into one of the workshops and there was somebody in there, and that's how I've always felt. This woman expressed it, and I've said it a number of times. But I looked around, and you know, everybody's talking about staying sober a day at a time, and we do this deal a day at a time, one day at a time. And I looked at the people, and I thought, they have like 30 years left to live, but I've got the rest of my life. Of course, they're staying a day at a time, and it's no big deal to them. So I grew up in an alcoholic home, an alcoholic insanity, and it's what I knew. And I came to know that people lived very, very differently. I had no idea that people were living any differently from how I was living. We had lots of alcohol in the house. We had lots of drinking and parties and a keg in the back with frosty mugs that we would fill for our dad and bring to him. And it was just a part of the norm. When I drank, when I got drunk the very first night that I went out with some friends, I was 13 years old, and we had peppermint schnapps snowballs. And it was a sip or two. And after a sip or two, like I've heard a number of people say, and it truly was that sort of experience, I could breathe. I was okay. I had never experienced that feeling up until the time that I took that drink at 13 years of age. Prior to that, I knew there was something wrong, wasn't quite certain what was wrong, but that I was never going to make it in life, that there was no way I was going to be able to get through elementary school successfully. I could not see my way through life. I wasn't interested in life. I was riddled with fear. And when I took that drink, I could breathe. Everything was okay. And I thought right then and there in the back of that car, this is what I will do as much as I can, as often as I can, whenever I can, and as much as possible. And that night, I drank. And I blacked out, passed out. Well, I got sick. I blacked out, passed out, and was brought home and put into my bed. And that's the way that I drank from that day forward. I was always, someone always had to get me home into my house and into my bed. I have that physical allergy, and when I put alcohol into my body, I want more alcohol, and I will drink more alcohol. And, you know, for me, it always ends with passing out. So I got here, like I said, at 19 years of age. I'd like to say that a lot of the decisions that I made and a lot of the mistakes that I made were because of my age. I've come to know that that's probably not the case. But I look back and I think, oh, I was young and enthusiastic, and I was so excited, you know. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and I was presented with the solution, I wanted it for everybody. You know, I was on fire, and I wanted it for my family, my friends, for people who had never known anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I shouted from the housetops. I was one of those who, you know, did not adhere to the traditions that I did not know about yet. And, you know, I read in some of the literature that I was reading about how we break our traditions, and how so many of us get to Alcoholics Anonymous, and really it's out of a, you know, there aren't necessarily, I didn't have a bad motive. I really did have a good motive. And that's just, you know, one example. And I know that there are a lot of people, there are a lot of, you know, young women that I've met in Alcoholics Anonymous who make the decisions, and they take pictures, and they are on Facebook, and they do a whole number of things that break our traditions. And a lot of them are really just, they're just excited, and they're not informed. And I by no means am an authority on this subject. I really have very little experience with this subject. What I know is, and what I can tell you for sure, is that the traditions are what hold Alcoholics Anonymous together. The traditions are what provide that unity for us. And it's in that unity that I have been given this life that y'all have shown me here in Alcoholics Anonymous. My life is nothing like the life that it was when I got here. I'm married, I have children, and I get to work with new ladies during the day. I mean, I have a really, really, really good life. Most of the time, I'm even pretty okay. inside my head. So much more than I ever was. And even when I'm not, I know positively that there is a solution. And so it's in the unity that I'm given this, that I'm given this gift that, you know, reaches so many others. And, you know, I got sober, got married, had a child, and this little girl, what she knows is about a life of principles in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can, you know, that's something I can never repay you people for. This child knows that when we do something and that when we're at fault, that we go and we ask, would you please forgive me? You know, I am sorry I did this. I was wrong. Would you please forgive me? That is how she responds, and that is how she expects us to respond to one another in the household. And, you know, those sort of things, this little girl has just, you know, the life that she's growing up with is just nothing like the life that I grew up with and the relationships that I have in my life. And anyway, those things that I have today would be gone, would not be available for the person who is coming into Alcoholics Anonymous if we're not adhering to the traditions. And, you know, and I just want to reiterate that I really don't I am no authority. I just know that it is my responsibility to pass that information on to the women that I sponsor. And that, you know, it talks in our literature that we each have a responsibility. This is our fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that as a member, each member has that job, and that if that's all I can do. You know, I can talk to others, I can give you the information, I can let you know that the reason we don't do this is because it's harmful to our society. That and you know, most of the time, nearly every time, when you talk to somebody and you give them the information, you show them where to go. It's all throughout our literature. And, you know, like Bill said, it's, you know, we can pick up any of our literature and we can look in the index and see, we can see that this was a problem that was going on some years ago. This was a problem that was going on in the 30s and the 40s. And it's the same problem. And, you know, if I had had access to the internet, and if I had had access to, you know, whatever, the social networks and the cell phones and the video recording phones that we have, if I had had access to all of that, I'd have been doing all of that when I got here. I'd have been doing it here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so, you know, I don't fault those, you know, newer people or not so new people who just don't know. And it is, it's us. You know, it's the people who have the information that aren't providing the other people, that aren't providing the newer people with the information, that are really responsible. And, you know, that little girl who comes into the meeting and she's got that video recording on her phone of, you know, the international, and she's showing it to her friends and she's excited, and, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. What's wrong is that somebody else doesn't stand up and say, you know, somebody else doesn't stand up and say, hey, listen, we don't, you know, and we're able to do that. You know, we've got the skills and the tools now to be able to do that in a loving and appropriate, responsible way where we can pull somebody aside and say, hey, listen, have you ever read about, let me show you. And you have we have pamphlets that are free, and we have, and it really doesn't take much. But what, you know, the thing that stopped me from being responsible was that fear. And, you know, what I've learned, and I look at my sponsor who's here today, and I can't help but think how many times I've heard her, you know, tell me and reiterate, point me back into the book and back to a power greater than myself, that we don't have to live by fear. We do not live that way anymore. And that I now have a power greater than myself, that he's got my back. And so I have to sometimes put a smile on my face and act as if I have the confidence and that I have the, you know, the esteem or whatever the case may be to go up and say something to somebody who's 20 years older than me. It's really uncomfortable. And, you know, but that's what we do, and that's what y'all have taught me. Regardless of how I feel, and regardless of what I think you think about me, I have a responsibility to take right action. And I just wanted to end with one little thing that Bill wrote in, I don't know where he wrote it, but Bill wrote something about how initially he didn't practice the traditions, or he didn't, or the principles. He wasn't practicing, you know, a number of the principles in Alcoholics Anonymous. And once he became aware, he started to practice the principles, you know, in the traditions and in the steps at that time, because of what people would think of him, and because they'd like pull him out of the front of AA. And then eventually he started to adhere to the traditions and the principles because he wanted to be that type of person. And then eventually he said, when he was writing, he said, "And today I'd like to think that I adhere to these traditions and these principles because it's who I've become and it's what I want to do." And that's how I see my that's how the course has been for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't do things necessarily for the right reason, and a lot of times it was because of my fear of what you thought of me. And today, you know, I pray and I ask God to help me to do the right thing and make the right choices because it's what I know He would have me be. And thank y'all for my life. I appreciate everything.
Thank you, Shonda. And next we will have Benita from Texas.
If you see me drinking water and it's shaking, it's not because I've been drinking. I had to write this down because I'm scared. So, and when I wrote it down, I was telling my sponsor, I said, I wrote it down, and she said, "You're not going to read it, are you?" I'm thinking, well, yeah, I was, and now I've been thinking for days that I'm not supposed to read this, and that's pretty scary. But I'm going to read it, more or less. My name is Benita, and I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Hi. My sobriety date is July 23rd of 1993, and it continues to be a miracle in my life. I came to you broken, a little wild, very self-absorbed, and undisciplined. Alcoholics Anonymous truly offers a design for living, first with me as outlined in our steps, and then for living with you as outlined in our traditions. I currently serve as alternate delegate of Area 67, Southeast Texas, Panel 59. My home group is the Baycliff 11th Street Group. We meet on Tuesday evenings at 7 p.m. If you find yourself in Baycliff on a Tuesday night, please drop by. We try to keep it a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and not anything anonymous. It is an open meeting. When I first received this loving invitation to participate in this workshop, I was thinking, well, dang, I can do this. I've been involved in public information for a long time, quite a few years. And then the fear set in, and that uncertainty of having to stand here and speak to you on this topic. And it's real intimidating. Okay. If I do that a few times, I feel more comfortable. Ooh. So some of this, I realize, going third, especially the topic that we're talking about, you've already heard. But I'm going to do it again anyway. The most important thing that I need to say is that I don't speak for Alcoholics Anonymous. That's really important. What I'm going to share here is based on my experience and my interpretations of what I gathered through the years. In Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age, page 135 and 136, Bill W. wrote, "Because I myself have always had strong tendencies toward the pursuit of prestige, wealth, and power, all of AA's traditions have borne down upon me with great force." You will remember that episode back in our living room on Clinton Street. There was a time when my group told me I could never become an AA professional. With nearly every tradition, much the same thing has happened. At first, I obeyed because I had to. I would have lost my standing in AA if I had not. After a while, I began to obey because I saw that the traditions were wise and right. While I conformed because it was right to do so, I still resisted inwardly. This was particularly true of anonymity. Today, I hope to have come to a time in my AA life when I can obey because I really want to obey, because I really want the traditions for myself as well as for AA as a whole. Therefore, each of our 12 traditions is really an expression of the deflation that each of us has to take, of the sacrifice that we shall all have to make in order to work, live, and work together. Those are some really powerful words, especially the deflation of self and the sacrifice of self. When I was newly sober, I found it necessary to share my membership in AA at the public level. It was real similar to that commercial. Are you a doctor? No, but I stayed in the Holiday Inn Express last night. I would proudly share my membership in AA at restaurants, shopping malls, grocery stores. And not only did I proudly share my membership, I shared yours. There came an occasion when I needed to negotiate a contract at a hotel for an event, and there sat someone at the table that I knew in these rooms. I perked up when I saw her until I noticed the fear in her eyes. And I realized at that moment that she did not want her membership disclosed to her boss. Later, privately, she thanked me for not recognizing her. It was an important lesson that I am grateful I didn't take this time to shout out, "Follow me to AA." Anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film seems easy enough to understand. Tradition 11 states our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. I understood early on that I could not have my picture taken for the newspaper, be filmed for television, or introduce myself by my full name as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Very unlike when I made it to Police Beat. It has been my personal anonymity that continues to be the challenge for this alcoholic. I already told you that I arrived in these rooms self-absorbed and undisciplined. I became involved in the Public Information Committee in my old home group around 1997 and went on to become involved in the district level, later serving as Area 67 Public Information Chairperson. I'm currently a member of District 81 Area 67 PICPC Committee. I enjoy this aspect of service, and being involved with the committee has brought to life that I am but a small part of a great whole. We have a standing invitation each semester to speak with nursing students. We are able to let them know what Alcoholics Anonymous is and what it is not and how we can be found. The committee has a PICPC telephone line, and we run several blurbs in the local community papers. As a committee, we study traditions, do practice presentations, and discuss new projects. Bill W. wrote on personal anonymity as AA's greatest protection. My interpretation of anonymity at the public level is I am responsible, not only to myself, but to you in this great fellowship. I have to ask myself when disclosing my membership, what is the purpose? Am I trying to be of service to the still suffering alcoholic by making myself available, such as informing my doctor? Or am I just tooting my own horn in a grandiose manner, looking for prestige or praise? What an opportunity we have as we celebrate the 75th year of Alcoholics Anonymous. The media will be covering our attendance in San Antonio, and our attraction will be how we conduct ourselves as a whole. Most of the reports on AA will be on the fellowship and its program of recovery that has offered as a design for living for millions suffering from alcoholism. We might have a scattering of negative reports on our fellowship given in interviews by members of our fellowship, similar to the ones in San Diego. For some of us, this will be a test of deflation and sacrifice. How well we give up the pursuit of prestige if asked to interview on camera. How well we practice humility and keep our egos in check. Again, in AA Comes of Age, on page 293, Bill wrote, and Bill already said this, we now fully realize that 100% personal anonymity before the public is just as vital to the life of AA as 100% sobriety is to the life of each and every member. This is not the counsel of fear. It is a prudent voice of long experience. Someone had given this example, and I'm going to share it. I thought it was really neat, talking about social websites like Facebook, which I am a member of Facebook. If I'm standing next to you and I say to you, I'm going to a meeting tonight at Bay Cliff 11th Street Group, then that's personal anonymity. Now, if I'm standing here and you're standing there and I say, I'm going to a meeting tonight at Bay Cliff 11th Street Group, then that's anonymity at the public level. And that's really the difference between sending a message to your inbox compared to posting your message on a wall. But those of you that don't do social networks wouldn't know that. What I have learned is that although I don't have a problem with others knowing that I am in AA, it's not about me. That's what I've learned. Therefore, I do not post my membership in Alcoholics Anonymous on my Facebook page, nor do I join any of the 24,000, I looked it up, plus recovery links. If I have something to ask someone about a group, a meeting, or event, I go to their inbox and I send them a message. And sometimes I even pick up the phone and call them. Great suffering and great love are AA's disciplinarians. We have no others. That's what Bill wrote. And in closing, I'm going to use a statement that Bill wrote that I hope one day will be what I feel. Today, I hope to have come to a time in my AA life when I can obey because I really want to obey, because I really want the traditions for myself as well as for AA as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you, Benita. And I'm going to add a couple comments in here. My name's Bob. I'm an alcoholic. And first of all, I'd like to thank the panel and would give them a little applause for good work. And, you know, before we get into the questions that I'm sure folks have or comments, and a little bit about my past. I was trying to think about public anonymity or anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. And Shauna kind of brought up something. And we're talking about the tradition of anonymity. And I was thinking when she was speaking, I was saying, my gosh, you know, I tried to be that way when I was a practicing alcoholic. We didn't want to see our names in the papers. We didn't want our pictures taken with numbers underneath. You know, we did all that to try to avoid that. But yet we still ended up that way. You know, I ended up dancing in the streets or yelling and screaming in the bar and making a fool of myself after whatever, a baseball game or whatever would it be, you know, a promotion. And I'd shout, you know, and yell and scream and things like that. Have pictures. I would take pictures of my friends when they're drunk and they're passed out and, you know, at their Wapatuli parties and remind them the next day of all the fun that they had and things. So it's kind of interesting we brought that into our fellowship with us. We still like to take pictures of our friends when we're having fun and being excited. And we still want to go and shout out good things about ourselves. And only now, you know, we know and we have an option whether to do it or not. So I never put that together before. But, yeah, we did. You know, I got a whole bunch of pictures from all my college buddies I'm waiting to use when they all, you know, leave their jobs and things like that. So only now, and we didn't have all that, you know, Facebook and internets and all that when I graduated from college, so I didn't post them all on there. So that's a whole other issue. But the other thing that kind of came to mind when folks were talking was I sobered up in a really small town and less than 2,000 people, coffee shops, two coffee shops, one at one end of town and one at the other end of the town. And in each of those coffee shops, there was, I used to call them the round tables, you know, and that's where everybody had kind of had their own coffee cup and all the elders of the community or would sit at those, and they would pass judgment on me when I drank. And when I came in and I would go to the coffee shop after an AA meeting, I would be sitting down there with all the other, you know, folks. And I just thought that's what you did. You always go to the coffee shop after you, you know, and you talk about the meeting after the meeting. And then one day I was into it about a couple of years and this fellow was visiting our community and we called him Missouri Mike. And I got alone talking to him and he says, you know, all them people know that you're an AA because you come there every night at 8:45, and you're down there, and you're boisterous, and you know, those tables are strategically placed also, so they can hear everything else that's going on in the coffee shop. If you didn't know that, anyhow, that's the way it is. And they're listening to all of your conversations, and what's happened at the meeting, who said what, who's doing what, you know, and whatever private you're talking about. And, you know, he said, you all really ought to think about that, because everyone knows already. Well, most of us knew we all were drunks, but they knew we sobered up. So I never thought about that, but, you know, we were inadvertently breaking our anonymity and our friends of our anonymity. And, you know, we never talked about anybody who wasn't there, I'm sure. But, you know, so we were breaking their anonymity also. And, you know, it just kind of occurred to me that maybe something to think about a little more where we don't know we're doing something, but we really should, you know, think about it. In district service, I was part of getting a district going, operating again. And I remember getting asked. We had an ecumenical group. Ministers all got together and had a luncheon. And we were having some difficulties with one of the particular churches, and they were starting to develop their own program for alcoholics. And so one of the other friends of ours, he asked if one of us from the district could come and talk about, you know, AA to them. And I thought, oh, my gosh, right away I'm thinking, oh, very anonymity break for sure here. I can't go talk to them and talk about Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I ended up doing was I ended up getting literature. There's a lot of literature that's printed up by the General Service Office. A lot of it's conference approved and a lot of it is service material. And you can read that. It talks about, gives you ideas and helpful suggestions when you go to a group like that. And I went to that group and I talked with them. And obviously they had to know my last name, so there was a little bit of a break there. But we just said, you know, this is what we're about and talked about the tradition and I believe it's, you never mention that you're an alcoholic. You can, you know, it's what you do when you do that talk and are a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I gave a little talk to him, and it was such a growth experience for me anyhow, but that's for another time. But that was another thing at the public level. How do you do that? Because I asked around the community and half day members said, oh, don't go do that, you know. But it was a really cool experience. Another one was I was asked, or our district was asked, and I ended up going, a couple of us, to talk about to a student class on psychology, and they were into a dependency course or something, and they wanted some alcoholics to come in and talk. So three of us went in and told our stories, you know. And again, there's literature out there to help you through that, you know, and what to do. The other big one for me was in my job. For a long time, it was easy. Because in my job, I introduced myself with my first name, my last name, and then my title and my position. Well, then when I started getting in service, and someone reminded me that, you know, how will they know who I am in service if I don't ever give my last name? Then I started giving my last name. Well, that messed everything all up. But, you know, when you're going around the room in your workplace and everyone's introducing themselves, and I'm sitting there in my mind going constantly over and over, I'm Bob, you know, I'm a forestry technician, or something like that, whatever I was at that time. And I'm repeating it, hoping that the wrong thing doesn't come out. And I carried that for a long time, you know, probably, you know, a couple of years. And I was sitting in a meeting someday, and somebody, a nurse shared that at the meeting and said she just blurted it out at the meeting at her workplace, you know. And, I mean, it wasn't intentionally done, but it's just the work we go through to try to maintain our anonymity. So it was another one, too. I mentioned that I was a trustee, and I served on the CPC as chair, CPC chair of the Trustees Committee of Treatment Facilities in CPC. I was on for 3 years and chaired for 2 years. And one of the big debates was on the Hope, the video Hope, and that FACES were in it. We debated it back and forth, And, you know, is that a break of anonymity? If we're having someone as actors portray us, you know, is that still a break of anonymity? Because somebody watching the video may not know. And here you have an actor is acting that way. I personally kept thinking that we needed to go back to the direction from the conference. And the conference is where you folks have expressed your views on this. And as a board member, we discussed it, but yet we still honored what the conference had told us. And we moved that forward. And it wasn't a unanimous decision. There was folks on the committee who were very good friends of mine who was in complete opposition, said we should have, you know, protection of anonymity, you know, on the faces of folks in there who were portraying alcoholics. But one of the things that came out of it was we needed to hear, because we were definitely into a new era at that level. What are we going to do? You know, and we were redefining that principle, this tradition. And that's your doings. That's us, the fellowship. That's we do that, you know. And maybe it is time to look at it. And so we sent out a letter, our committee did, to the fellowship to ask for opinions and thoughts on anonymity and the changes that way. And my understanding is, I rotated off the board when the letter was due back, but my understanding is that it was pretty much 50-50, you know. People didn't have that it was a problem or not, and it was quite surprising to me. But I think more than anything else, we need to discuss it as a fellowship. It changed. It's changed. I mean, the Facebook stuff, everything, you know, all that. The Internet has brought a whole new realm into how we're defining our anonymity today. And I hope that the conversation continues, and hopefully we'll get some here. And I'm still in a little bit. I rotated back, and I'm an area co-chair for our newsletter, and we're debating about whether we should put our service newsletter on our website. You know, half the folks want it on there before the ease, but yet are we going to go through and take everybody's last name and phone numbers, contact numbers out of our newsletter? Then how's anybody who gets our service newsletter going to know how to get a hold of us, you know? And do I, as the editor, really want to do, a co-editor, do we really want to do two newsletters? One's that's anonymity protected, and then one that is, is not anonymity protected that we have hand hard copies out to. So we're still in the middle of the boiling debate, where we're going to go with it. So anyhow, a lot of exciting times. I think this is a a wonderful and great time for Alcoholics Anonymous. Anytime we have a chance to get down into it and debate our principles and debate where we're at today and where we are in society and where we're going is, I think, a growth time for us. It's a big growth time for us. And so I hope this continues. And with that, I think that I'm going to close and I'm going to listen to questions and sharing from the microphone. Thank you very much.
First of all, are we being taped today?
Yes.
Okay. My name's Rudy S. I have the disease of alcoholism. I sobered up in the Upper Peninsula, Hancock, January 15th of 2000. And my last drink was in Marquette, Michigan.
All right. I'll talk to you afterwards.
The reason I asked about the taping was because normally in a group of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd give my full name. I was... when I went to treatment for the second time, and hopefully the final time, I was in a four-month program with a gentleman who had been to treatment and a physician. I am a physician myself, and it was a program directed towards physicians. And he had sobered up in Akron, Ohio, and he made it very clear to us early on that there was an expectation, at least within our groups, that we would use our full names. And that was the tradition, he said, that, you know, that was present in Akron. Again, only if you chose to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's forcing you to do it. And what he was doing was he was preparing me for what was going to happen when I came back to my workplace. Because when you are a licensed professional and you are under the auspices of a board that is also there to protect the public, your anonymity is gone in the workplace. As part of my employment, I had to notify not just all my partners, but the hospital administrator, my secretary, everybody who worked with me. I'm a pathologist. All my lab techs. Everybody had to know that I was a recovering alcoholic, and they had to be given specific instructions as to who they were to contact in the hospital or in the corporation if they believed that I was under the influence of alcohol. That was the only conditions that I could come back to work. And that's true all across the country. If you are under the auspices of a health professional program, that's with physicians. Now, I can't speak for, I know it's true for pharmacists because I go to international doctors in AA and we have pharmacists there and we have dentists. I know it's true for all of those folks. But I can tell you that's an issue you have to deal with. But again, you know, it's at the personal level. You know, I'm voluntarily giving up my anonymity in my workplace in order to have a job. Okay, I may not like it, but you know the alternative is to go to work for Walmart. Nothing against anybody who works for Walmart, but I was under the impression I was, or at least my own pride was I was a little bit better educated. To I was trained to be a professional, and I wanted to continue to do the work I was trained for. Now, the other issue that comes up in the workplace is, and it doesn't have to matter what workplace you're in, is that the whole business about how can you help, how can you advocate for recovery and yet at the same time not violate your AA anonymity? And, you know, to me the answer is you don't ever mention AA. You can tell somebody you're a recovering person. You can advocate. You know, I had an example when I sit on the credentials committee, I was also sitting on the medical executive board, and we had a surgeon who came in as a welcome tenant. That's somebody's there only temporary. And he was drunk in the ER. And they, confronted him, sent him back to his apartment. The administrator suspended him immediately. We met within a week, and we were deciding what to do with this guy. And one of the things we could have done was to suspend him beyond 30 days, which put him in the national data bank, which every employer from there on out would know about it. Well, that's not really the big issue because every employer from there on out, once he was in the clutches of the health professional program, they were going to know about it. But though a lot of us are concerned that one day that data bank is going to be available to the public. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of pressure among, politicians and whatnot, various advocacy groups who want that. And if that day ever came, that was what I was worried about, was why put this guy in the data bank? I was given the opportunity to resign voluntarily, and I wanted to afford that guy the same opportunity, but at the time, I'm the only recovering person sitting in that room, and they were getting ready to hang him. I mean, people were mad. Mm-hmm. And I had to make a decision. I knew that there were people in that room who had been on the credentials committee when I came on board, but that was a number of years earlier. And so, but there were a lot of them there who didn't know that I was a recovering person. And I decided to break my anonymity in front of all of them and ask them, look, you know, if you were doing to this guy what you're, if it had happened to me what you're doing to this guy, I wouldn't be here today. And the long and the short of it is we, you know, we didn't do anything that got him in the data bank. He did get turned over to the people in Oregon, and he's practicing again today. And you know, a similar situation happened again. As I'm chief of staff now. Now, who in the world would have dreamed that I would be the chief of staff when 10 years ago, this past January, it was my chief of staff who, ironically, was a recovering drug addict anesthesiologist who confronted me in the hospital when I was drunk. Mm-hmm. Well, I confronted an anesthesiologist who was, you know, acting strange, and we suspected it was fentanyl, since that's the usual drug with anesthesiologists. Turned out to be marijuana. Again, they're getting ready to throw the book at him, and they wanted to fire him on the spot, and, you know, the whole nine yards. And so, you know, I was able to, I was in a position to, because he was, anyway, he was provisional. He didn't even have full active privileges yet. And I was able to intervene on behalf of him with the administration, and he's still at work now a year later. But the point is, if I had stayed silent, but again, never mentioning AA, just the fact that, you know, I'm a recovering, and the things that they were wanting to do with him that were beyond what the state was already requiring, and let me tell you, they require a lot. I was able to intervene and say, look, this is not necessary.
Okay.
I mean, you know, let them do it. So anyway, I just wanted to just end with that. Is there's an important difference between recovery and advocating for recovery and ever mentioning AA and the fact that you're a member of AA. And I would encourage, and also the whole business about, you know, personal anonymity. It's our own choice as to whether we, you know, publicly declare that.
Thanks.
I'm Joel, an alcoholic.
Hi, Joel.
I also have comments rather than a question, but I'll try to keep it brief. I'm serving as the delegate for the San Diego Imperial Area in California, and I serve on the Public Information Committee, and I really want to thank the panelists. You gave me a lot that's going to help me be a more effective member of that committee at the conference. At the conference this year, we discussed the fact that one of the main places where people are running into trouble with public anonymity breaks is in obituaries. The family can decide to break the anonymity of the deceased in an obituary. That's not a problem. But names of living AA members were slipping into people's obituary. The sponsor might be listed by full name as a survivor. And so this year the conference did approve new language in the Understanding Anonymity pamphlet to help make it clear that the anonymity of living, surviving AA members should be respected in obituaries. We also asked the trustees to, just the Public Information Committee, not the full conference, asked the trustees to develop a new section for Understanding Anonymity pamphlet about anonymity in a digital age. And in the meantime, we hope that they'll put the AA guidelines on anonymity in the Internet in a more prominent place on the AA.org website. And I really appreciated the comments of the last speaker about anonymity in cyberspace and on social networking sites. And that guideline, AA and the Internet, has a great section about that. It's a wonderful tool to kind of lovingly send to an AA member who might be stepping over a line, and you can find that guideline on AA.org. Thanks.
Thanks, Cheryl.
I'm Carol, alcoholic.
Hey, Carol.
Right now serving as public information chairman for Western Washington Area 72. And just a couple things and a question, and to start with is, I am always reminded that we are not a secret society. And if we don't tell people who we are, and if we aren't willing to step out of anonymity at the personal level, then people don't know where to find us. So, you know, when I give presentations, I'm always reminding that. The other thing is, we just recently had a Seattle Times article, and the reporter was being stonewalled, and finally she called, well, she didn't call me, but was given to me through GSO, the contact. And I was on the phone, and I said, well, I'm not sure how to handle this. And dead silence with the PI coordinator in GSO, dead silence. And I thought, well, what have I said, you know? And all of a sudden she said back, and I wanted to address this in the form of a question to Bill. She said, well, the press are our friends. And I just, you know, that was so profound for me. And it turned out we had this wonderful article, which is now in the archives already, I've been told, that was done on June the 11th of this year. And it's a beautiful example of a reporter who got our traditions, understood it, and printed this front page Seattle Times article about our 75th anniversary. So I just wanted to ask Bill, you know, how do you feel about that, that the press are our friends, and how we sometimes forget that? Because Bill W. talks about let our friends advertise for us, and somebody has to tell people who we are. So I...
The times that we have dealt with the press, we have explained to them what our position is on anonymity. It's not personal. What we're talking about is Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not talking about Bill. When I talked about anonymity this morning, I'm talking about the viewpoints of Bill W., the viewpoints of Alcoholics Anonymous, period. None of that is my viewpoint. I mean, I don't even agree with some of this stuff. But I am more concerned about Alcoholics Anonymous than I am about mostly anything else. It's the number one thing in my life. And if Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob came up with these ideas some 75 years ago, or 70 years ago when they talked them all out, I don't have an argument with that. Because I think that's the way it's supposed to be. Does it work? It's worked for me for 34 plus years. And that's what it is. And most of my time that I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous has been spent with the PICPC committees. We've gone out to the public. We've talked with the reporters. And did I say my name is Bill Conopath? Yes, I did. That to me is not breaking anonymity. That's informing that man who I am so he can call me. I gave him my business card. My name's on there. It doesn't say Bill Conopath is a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. It says Bill Conopath with my address and phone number. I think we misinterpret what personal anonymity and anonymity at the public level is. If, you know, we can get so anonymous in our home groups, and somebody, the old line I ever heard was, a guy gets sick, or a lady gets sick, and you want to go visit him in the hospital. What do you, we walk in and say, I want to see Bill K. Huh? Yeah, that's exactly what you, and you know what's going to happen, that nurse, yeah, right. I mean, we got to let them know. What we were concerned at this committee today, or this panel today, was anonymity at the public level. That's where you draw the line. The press, I've spent hours, and probably most of us have, that been around for a little bit with the radio and the television and the newspaper. And I will also tell you this, that when you explain anonymity to these people, they accept it. They don't challenge it. Most of them don't challenge it. And then what we have done, when there's been an anonymity break at the level of the reporters, I've sent them to 12 and 12. With my compliments, if you have any questions, call me. Thanks. Hope it answers your question.
See, Bill must have been part of my story. I was 6 months sober and was in a motorcycle accident. And I got moved, transferred to a regional hospital 120 miles away. And I only knew first names, no initials, couldn't call anybody. They couldn't get a hold of me. All he knew is Bob just didn't show up no more. Bob must be out drinking again. And, you know, it was a pretty interesting experience. But there's a whole other story to that where the local AA community through the minister, because they reached out. When I was in the hospital, I told them I was a member of AA. Well, then the local community started showing up, local AAs. None of the ones from my home group or my back home knew, but everyone else knew in that community. So, you know, I did get AAs, but, you know, that was always troublesome, and we were very good at protecting that anonymity at that level. So, good comment, Bill. Next.
Yeah, hi, I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dave.
Quick observation and then a question for the panel. The more I think about it and the more I study, the more I like the concept of anonymity, because I recognize how much it protects the concept of attraction rather than promotion. And to me, attraction is based on choice, whereas promotion is based on fear, or certainly in many cases. And I recognize that the concept of anonymity, for me, helps keep ego out of the situation, because promotion is very closely tied with ego, and ego is also very closely tied with my ability to go back out and the danger it is to me. So the anonymity, personal anonymity, also protects me as well as the group. That being said, we talk about press, radio, and films, and I would like to include in my question other public forums, such as the creation of public content, such as songwriting, such as writing of literature, and public performances. Is the standard, in the opinion of the panel, such as the doctor said, that it's okay for me to talk about the fact that I am an alcoholic, recovering alcoholic, as long as I don't mention AA? And is it okay for me as a creative person or an artist to talk or mention or include AA as long as I either take a pseudonym or I don't mention the fact that I'm a recovering alcoholic.
Can I check? Bonita, do you?
Sorry, I'll sit down while, while we gear up for that one.
Okay, I can do opinions. And I think in that question you said a whole lot of that probably right. I, for me personally, the danger is, because there's such a thin, fine line. And the thin, fine line is I can let people know that I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous without saying I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I always have to take it back to me, what is the purpose? What we carry is the message. That's our attraction, is the message of hope, period. And if I might be doing it wrong, so what I'm giving you the message is, you know, me, I'm the message. And I think that that's the fine line, that we have to be careful how we kind of skate around it. It's one of those things, you know, does one tradition give you the right to break all the other traditions? You know, I always wonder about that. But just the fine line of how we kind of skirt around it. If I say it like this, I'm not saying, you know, does that make it right? That's something personal we all have to ask ourselves. So.
I just wanted to add one thing. The man sounds like he's talking about the professional people who do the songwriting and all that. And what I wanted to mention to you is there was a film some time ago called My Name is Bill W. And the two actors were in with James Wood and James Gardner. And they were on a talk show out of Chicago. I don't know if it was Oprah Winfrey or the guy before. But the point I wanted to make was that there was a lot of Q&A after they had done with the interview with her, him, whatever. If any of you saw it, the question was to James Wood, are you in Alcoholics Anonymous? He said, no. They said to James Wood, are you in Alcoholics Anonymous? Or James Gardner, are you in Alcoholics Anonymous? He said, I'm in recovery. See, that's the difference. Me, if I'm doing an interview or something, I'm in a recovery program. If they block out the face and forget the name, then I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thanks.
Okay, we'll take the last three questions at the mic, or comments, I should say.
My name's Todd. I'm a grateful alcoholic. Sober since December 30th of 1981. Since I've been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've seen things drastically change just over the past nearly 30 years, surely since Bill Wilson passed away as our co-founder. To me, these are some new areas that I've not seen just over the past 5 or 10 years that I've not seen before. Two of the areas are social websites. I'm very uncomfortable seeing members identifying themselves as members of our fellowship on a social website. I'm very uncomfortable seeing all their friends with their names and their full faces all kind of grouped in together as being members of Alcoholics Anonymous by association. Picture groups are being posted as part of their fellowship saying, here we are, attended this particular AA convention, and here's everybody that was there. And a lot of it comes as, I think Shonda was describing, through enthusiasm and excitement, particularly from newer members. Recently I watched at a local convention where post boards were put out there without people's permission saying, here, sign up to attend this convention, and those people did not give their permission. They sure didn't want their names and faces posted as part of that post board. I watched one member relapse over the past month, become angry at Alcoholics Anonymous, and posted very boldly on their MySpace page, AA sucks. Do not go to AA. AA members will do nothing but stab you in the back. Please go to church instead. I saw this myself. I'm not making this up in my own local area. I think anybody can see how this is a violation of our tradition, and this is harmful to Alcoholics Anonymous as well as other individuals' recovery. I'll list one more thing, and then I'll describe, not a question, but a statement for what I think part of our responsibility is. Another thing I think is MP3. I like to be able to download MP3s off websites. I like to be able to go out there and look at, I've been chairman of a conference where I've downloaded people's who speakers and listened to those speakers ahead of time. I've spoken at conferences too, and sometimes I've made a mistake and used my last name, even when I was given an anonymity statement at the very beginning, asking me, please don't do this. I've accidentally done it, maybe through some kind of excitement, without thinking. I'm wondering if there's a sense of responsibility for both of these two issues as us as AA members that we should say something or do something. If we should report something back to that social website or that MP3 site saying, gee, I really appreciate downloading your MP3s, but I would really appreciate you respecting Alcoholics Anonymous and not post anywhere they use their last name. or that I appreciate that you're excited about your sobriety as part of a MySpace page or another type of space, but I would appreciate you not using the International Conference of AA that you attended and posted pictures of the International Conference of AA of that. I think where the real issue lies is not enthusiastic newcomers or enthusiastic people who may not value my fellowship the way I do, but maybe we as Alcoholics Anonymous members need to be discussing this as suggested by GSO New York on our area of state, our area of district, and deciding what should we do and who should do it. Who should contact someone when something like this is happening? How should we be discussing this in our own groups, home groups or districts? Because a lot of us, since it's kind of a new territory, people don't know how to respond. They just talk amongst themselves, but nobody really responds. Nobody sends an email to that website saying, please don't do that. Or that individual saying, I would respect you not to do that. Or at least take my face and name off your friends list if you don't quite get that, you know. And I think this is something, as GSO suggests, that we should be discussing more and more in our own group forums at our own districts and state level. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Got time for a question? Angie Alcoholic, Sobriety Gate, June 26, 1978. I have a question for Bill. I would like to know what your thoughts are about people writing books, and it's clear to us as members of Alcoholics Anonymous that they are AA members. Maybe they use catchphrases or things like that, and they put their last names on the books. I've even seen, and some of those are general, but I've seen some where they even reference the 12 steps in the title, and they're putting the last names on their books. And what are your thoughts about that?
It's tough. I don't think we can control people. I think that people are going to do what they want to do. If there's an answer to any question, as far as public information is concerned, it's education. If we can't get out there and get to the public and teach them, I don't think we're doing our job. As far as somebody writing a book, they're going to write a book. And you know what? It's the shock treatment. That's why they use it. Why do they use Alcoholics Anonymous? I have a theory about that. I don't know how good it is or bad it is, but my answer has always been the people use Alcoholics Anonymous or AA or the symbols and all this because we are the most successful program in recovery, far be anything that I ever know of or ever heard of. And so people will do that. The celebrity that just gets out of the treatment center and says, I'm recovering now. I'm cured, everything, because I did it through Alcoholics Anonymous. What am I going to do? How can I do anything? I can't stop that. You can't stop it. The TV can't. It's already done. It's already out there. I have to admit that I'm a dinosaur when it comes to the Facebook and the Internet and all that. I don't use it. I don't work it. I think that's something we have to look at. But that's going to have to be the people that are in GSO because I'm not involved in that. But using writing books and writing songs and people are just going to do it. We can't control everybody.
Do you think it's wrong if they don't say that they are members of AA?
I think it's up to them. There is one thing I would like to add, though. The fourth tradition talks about the group, that we are autonomous. And I have gone to many groups that have done stuff that I didn't feel was right, our district didn't feel right, and I was the representative. And I said, what you have to remember is, they said, well, Bill, we're autonomous. We can do whatever we want to do. And I said, wait a minute. You read the fourth tradition in its entirety. If it affects Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole, I think you better look at it. I'm not going to tell them they're wrong because they're going to do whatever they want to do anyway. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Kathy and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Kathy.
My sobriety date is May 22nd, 1993. My questions are, I am the PICPC chair in our district. And trying to communicate with the professionals and things like that. We have an alcohol council and a mental health is a whole group together. And I, as a personal individual, have joined this council, but I have joined it also trying to see what we have to offer to them and if they want it. And I get in a quandary as to putting my name down, you know, as a PI, do I acknowledge that I'm the PI chair? And the other part of that is when you write letters to the schools or the clergy or whomever and want to give a presentation, offer a presentation, do you sign it as Kathy, you know, PI, Public Information Chair, District 36?
Mm-hmm. Do you want to do that?
As a professional, what I've learned or my experience has been, when I am presenting myself as that professional, that's exactly what I am, is that professional. And it's kind of like that two-hat thing. I can't be both hats at the same time. So, you know, if I was on a council, I would use my name as a person on that council, but I wouldn't, like, swap seats and then become the member of the fellowship. Does that make any sense?
It doesn't answer the question being, how do I let them know that there is a public information committee of our local community of Alcoholics Anonymous that is there to provide information, to provide literature, to provide speakers, if that is what is needed within what they're doing? How do they contact you if you don't tell them who you are?
In our the public information workbook for the committee has wonderful examples of letters that you give to the professional on how to contact us. It gives us wonderful examples of what we write, what we tell them, what we don't tell them.
See the example of how I sign the letter.
When you sign the letter, when we sign a letter to the professional in our committee, Stevie, we sign first and last name if we're doing the judges. We let them know about our tradition of anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. Okay. But when we have to present ourselves to professionals, we can't just go there and say, hi, I'm Benita W. We have to present ourselves as professionals.
Right.
We have to do it properly. But we do let them know that. And so, yes, on the one, and then also letting them know about our tradition of anonymity.
Oh, thank you.